Peter B. Collins, News and Comment. It's Friday, January 22nd, 2016. We open to the strains of a song that was originally recorded by Simon and Garfunkel. It's a beautiful tune about America and its aspirations. This is the version delivered by the British rock band Yes. Classic progressive rock from way back in 1971. We've all come to look for America. And yesterday, the Bernie Sanders for President campaign released a powerful one-minute commercial where the only words spoken are at the very end, where you hear him say, "I'm Bernie Sanders, and I approved this message." And it's a very powerful, uplifting spot. Doesn't reference Donald Trump or any of the controversies. Doesn't take a dig at Hillary Clinton. And I think it's going to prove very effective in the closing stretch here in Iowa and New Hampshire and some of the other early primary states. There's a new poll from the Suffolk University in New Hampshire showing Sanders with a 9-point lead over Clinton in the primary set for early February. And that contrasts with the 27-point lead that was attributed to Sanders, I think, the Monmouth poll that we cited yesterday. In any event, these polls are really shaking up the Clinton campaign. They are alarmed, and they are turning increasingly desperate. And in our opening sequence here, I'm going to run down some of the attacks on Senator Sanders and the way they are being orchestrated by friends and allies of Bill and Hillary Clinton. First, I want to turn to a great analysis written by Kevin Gostola at shadowproof.com. Kevin is a young journalist who I consider to be a real bright up-and-comer, and he's written a great piece here where he talks about how the liberals, the centrist corporate Democrats who came to power with Bill and Hillary Clinton through the Democratic Leadership Council, if you remember that operation back in the 90s, that's what traded labor and grassroots support for corporate support of the Democratic Party. And it's been that way since. And Kevin Gostola says that the cases being made against Sanders are really arguments against citizens voting their conscience. The uncertainty and dismissiveness toward Sanders serves to silence any critics of the corporate-driven politics entrenched in the Democratic Party. It suggests a fear that Democrats might actually stand against corporate power for a change. And he runs down some of the recent attacks from Jonathan Chait, Michael Cohen at the Boston Globe, then over at Vox, Matt Iglesias urged voters to take Sanders seriously. Gostola translates that thusly, by which he means it is time to recognize all Sanders has to offer America is, quote, half-baked plans and populist slogans. And Gostola notes the rhetoric fits a playbook that the liberal class has followed for the past decades, and Chris Hedges has argued the liberal class's disposal of its most independent and courageous members has long been a part of its pathology. That is very well stated. Corporations now hold government completely captive, and the liberal class, which purged itself of the only members who had the fortitude and vision to save it from irrelevance, bears some responsibility. And in taking apart Jonathan Chait's argument, Gostola says it really amounts to an argument that the Democratic Party politicians and the operatives who run their campaigns would be uncomfortable with talking openly about socialism because that would alienate the corporate interests that they've cozied up to in order to win elections. And Gostola sums up this way, it's one thing to vote for Hillary Clinton and other Democrats who are more than happy to serve the moneyed elite if you actually believe in what she stands for as a presidential candidate. But it is quite another thing to delude people into voting for her simply because it's your view that Bernie Sanders' vision is difficult to make a reality. That position accepts the status quo and embraces a politics of low expectations, where the best elected officials can do is triage the effect of wealth and power, becoming more and more concentrated in the hands of the few. Very well said, Kevin. I'm really impressed with that young man. Paul Krugman has joined the scrum. He published a column in the New York Times today, which I found really condescending. And I think that he is somehow tied to the Clinton campaign because he uses the most recently surfaced talking point, at least one of the angles used to attack Sanders. And we went into some detail in yesterday's podcast about how Sanders appeared on Rachel Maddow's show. She asked him why, you know, how he felt about not getting the endorsements of Planned Parenthood and the gay activist group, the Human Rights Campaign. And Sanders said, well, he'd like those endorsements, but, you know, he's not the establishment guy, and Hillary is. And so this meme that somehow Sanders is acting inappropriately or attacking people by simply observing the truth that Hillary's the establishment candidate and Bernie is not. Well, Krugman picks that up this way. He says, on the left, there's always a contingent of idealistic voters eager to believe that a sufficiently high-minded leader can conjure up the better angels of America's nature and persuade the broad public to support a radical overhaul of our institutions. In 08, that contingent rallied behind Obama. Now they're backing Sanders, who has adopted such a purist stance that the other day he dismissed Planned Parenthood as part of the establishment. He did not. He didn't dismiss it. He dismissed their endorsement. And when Planned Parenthood announced their endorsement, I raised the points, my view, that this was a big mistake and that they really shouldn't get engaged, particularly this early. But it's payback for past political favors, and that's how things work in the political establishment. And I think, as I think I mentioned yesterday, that the Clinton campaign's use of this establishment, anti-establishment meme is only going to strengthen the appeal and support of Bernie Sanders in this very turbulent, very different political cycle. They're playing the old game, kind of like a political Cold War. And I think they have severely miscalculated. And the real ugly part of Krugman's column is at the end. The point is, he says, that while idealism is fine and essential, it's not a virtue unless it goes along with hard-headed realism about the means that might achieve your ends. Sorry, but there's nothing noble about seeing your values defeated because you preferred happy dreams to hard thinking about means and ends. Don't let idealism veer into destructive self-indulgence. And of course, his argument ignores all of the negatives of Hillary Clinton that will be exploited by whoever the Republicans run. She's just this, you know, hard-nosed realist who's the stern father figure the Democrats long for. Well, that's bullshit, Mr. Krugman. And I call you out for it. Because this column is simply shilling for the Clinton campaign. Then there was the Washington Post piece published on January 19th where 10 foreign policy experts support Hillary Clinton and say that Bernie Sanders is misguided or misinformed about national security issues. Now, as you know, I think there are valid criticisms of Bernie Sanders on foreign policy, and I pointed them out in my Wednesday podcast. And if you haven't heard it, and you're hunkered down for the snowstorm in the east or the big rainstorm in the west this weekend, check it out, because Robert Perry did an excellent analysis of how Sanders and Clinton are both captive to false beltway memes about Syria, about Ukraine. Those were the examples that surfaced in the debate. So, I do not proclaim that Bernie Sanders is excellent on foreign policy. But Hillary Clinton is worse. She is the hawk who is responsible for the failed blunder policy of invading Libya and dumping Gaddafi, creating a failed state that has led to further problems in the region. And that's just one example. So, on the face of it, the Washington Post runs this story. 10 national security experts, foreign policy experts, back Clinton, call Sanders misguided. Well, Lee Fung, who is a great investigative reporter who digs into public records over at The Intercept, he notes that half of those foreign policy experts have ties to military contractors. and he names names. I've linked to his story, and you can follow up and read it yourself. That link is in the show file at peterbcollins.com. Now, Al Jazeera America, which has announced it's shutting down its cable TV operations at the end of April, joins the fray here. And this is one of the most misguided and trivial attacks on Bernie Sanders that I have seen so far. And I'm not just blaming Al Jazeera. They're running the story. And they shouldn't, but this surfaced as an attack point from the Clinton campaign. And it is a Karl Rove classic. You attack your opponent on his strongest issue. So one of Bernie's claims is we have a corrupt campaign finance system. Everybody knows it. He says, I don't have a super PAC. Hillary does. These are important points of contrast, and voters know that. So, because of Sanders' position, the attack line is to taint him with some sort of a dark money PAC operation, like the kind that Karl Rove runs. Like the super PAC that Hillary has. And at the outset, I want you to know that what I'm about to describe to you is a paltry amount of money, $20,000, that has been spent on some cable TV ads, I think they're running in Iowa, from the Friends of the Earth Action. Now, Friends of the Earth is an old Enviro group. Friends of the Earth Action is the arm that they use to do what's called advocacy. And some of it is to advocate for bills in Congress or court rulings in favor of environmental issues. And they spent a whopping $70,000 in 2008 supporting John Edwards. So this isn't the first time that they have run campaign commercials on behalf of a candidate using their money. It's called an independent expenditure, and it's very different from a super PAC or a dark money PAC. But because they're using a 501c4, which is the appropriate IRS entity to run an advocacy campaign, the whisper here is, oh, there's dark money in there. Now, whatever the source of it, it's a measly $20,000. And it's not dark money. Eric Pica, the president of Friends of the Earth Action, says, you know, most of the money is from small donors, and we are going to release the names of all our donors, so it's not dark money in any way, shape, or form. Now, they could keep the donors secret under the IRS rules, but they're not going to, so there is no issue here. And it shows you how desperate the Clinton campaign is to dirty up Bernie Sanders and to weaken his support on the issues where he polls the strongest. One more item on this list here. Yesterday, I reported to you about a scurrilous attack on Sanders, which had a litany of these opposition research points that was published at what I called a captive blog called Blue Nation Review. And after the podcast, I did a little more digging, and my terminology was pretty apt, because the Huffington Post reported in November last year that David Brock, the guy who ran the attack campaign to bring down Bill Clinton in the 90s, using money from Richard Mellon Scaife and other dangerous right-wing extremists in this country, David Brock had his epiphany. And I know David a little. I met him in 2003 and 2004, he published a book, his mea culpa for what he did. It was called The Republican Noise Machine. Then he founded Media Matters for America. And I openly supported Media Matters when they were exposing the extreme media operations of Fox News and the extreme media messages of others. And Media Matters does a lot of good work. I got to know David Brock a little bit. We had a meeting about a potential political campaign one time. And David Brock is now using his evil skills that he honed against Bill Clinton in a ruthless level of support for Hillary Clinton's campaign. And David Brock sits up atop a kind of propaganda empire, Media Matters for America, And I only learned yesterday that he has taken over the organization called CREW. CREW stands for Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. It was founded by Melanie Sloan. Melanie Sloan was a weekly contributor to my nationally syndicated radio show from roughly 2005 to 2009. And she's a bright, independent, nonpartisan investigator of corruption. And she took a lot of heat from Democrats because they wanted her to only expose Republican corruption, and she refused. Well, yesterday, as I did a little digging, I learned that Melanie Sloan stepped down from CREW about a year ago because David Brock managed to take over as chairman of the board of the organization that she had founded. So, David Brock runs Media Matters for America. He runs the Hillary Rapid Response operation. He controls Blue Nation Review, which yesterday published this litany of attacks on Sanders that was written by Peter Daou, who is the CEO of True Blue Media. And so what we see here is that, by the way, the pro-Clinton super PAC that he runs is called Correct the Record. And so Brock is the main mudslinger for the Clinton campaign. And he came out yesterday with predictable statements about how Sanders can't win, Sanders would be bad for America, bad for Democrats. And David Brock is an unprincipled man. And so his credibility, in my view, has been reduced to just about zero. Every day, I like to mention some of the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. People like Judy Holloway, Steve Wozinski, Linda Gray, Aaron Blair. They are monthly subscribers who come through every month, and I really appreciate that. I invite you to join them, and I need some new subscribers. A few people have faded away in the last month or two, and I need your support to continue these operations into this important election year. So come on over to peterbcollins.com. Click on the menu link, then click on Become a Subscriber. You can choose your level of support, $5, $10, $20 a month, the $50 annual subscription. We've got your Spreaker app for smartphones that use the Android operating system. And we've got the PBC app that's available for $2.99 in the Apple App Store. It runs on your iPhone and iPad. And I truly need your support, and I hope you can come through to the extent that you can afford it. I have to report to you a little heartbreak because I'm about to share with you information about the sham election that will take place with U.S. insistence in Haiti this Sunday, January 24th. And about an hour ago, I recorded a great interview with a guy who has spent quite a bit of time in Haiti and knows the landscape there. His name is Joshua Steckley, and he's affiliated with a nonprofit called Other Worlds Are Possible. And yesterday, I cited their report on the fraudulent Haitian election that is going forward this Sunday. So Josh Steckley gave me a great interview with a lot of good information, and I was just preparing to save it on the computer when the software crashed and erased that file. So I'm sorry I can't bring that to you today. But I have linked to a pretty important New York Times story about the Haitian election published in Friday's edition. And it shows that we are spending $33 million of American money to run this election that was riddled with fraud in the general election in October. And now the runoff is featuring only one person. And that's the person that has been exposed with deep conflicts of interest and a real corporate streak. And it's fascinating to see this play out with the support of Bill and Hillary Clinton. Bill Clinton through the Clinton Foundation. They have been very active in rebuilding Haiti and restructuring the economy to make it more favorable to outsiders. More exports, more foreign control. And Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, aided and abetted that whole process. She was she played an important role in plucking Michel Martelly as the current pro-corporate president of Haiti. And so this Sunday, there will be a runoff, but the opponent bailed out. His name is Jude Celestin. He's a former government official, and he has declared this a farce and urged his voters not to vote at all. And there are concerns that violence may erupt. There has been violence in Port-au-Prince the last few days. And once again, we see gringo diplomacy employed by the United States. And it is just so ugly. I hope you will read this article. The New York Times did a pretty good job of presenting the situation based on my conversation with Josh Steckley. Senate Democrats are trying to limit the damage from the Donald Trump-inspired hysteria over immigration, Trump's declaration that he would temporarily stop all Muslims from coming into the country. And what we're seeing is an effort to block any further moves. Now, in the massive Cromnibus budget bill that was rammed through in December, there was language that was inserted after the questionable events in San Bernardino on December 2nd that said that Syrian and Iraqi refugees have to go through much more scrutiny before they could come to the United States. And they essentially say that the director of the FBI has to personally approve each one. It's ridiculous. Now, at the last minute, the nation of Iran was inserted to that list. So, right now, the action in the Senate is the Democrats, led by Harry Reid, succeeded in blocking a bill that would crack down on Syrian and Iraqi refugees coming into the United States. They managed to avoid the 3/5 vote that they needed to move forward, and so that legislation would require new FBI background checks and individual sign-offs from 3 high-ranking federal officials before any refugee from Syria or Iraq could come to the United States. And Harry Reid is a guy I don't find very courageous or inspiring, but he's right about this. He said this bill is just another step in the absolute wrong direction, the direction of Donald Trump. So I'm glad to see Democrats are finding some footing to resist this kind of nativist, nationalist hysteria. That's the best term that I can come up with to describe it. But many people are paying a price because of the lack of thought about the implications of these kinds of restrictive immigration rules. And so, in reaction to the new rules that are taking effect regarding Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Sudan, there is a problem that journalists and others who have dual nationalities are being subjected to unnecessary scrutiny or even rejection of their travel plans. So just Tuesday, a British-Iranian journalist working for the BBC was taken off a plane in London when the U.S. denied her visa waiver. And what we're seeing is that other nations are thinking about tightening up restrictions or regulations regarding American travel in their countries. And a lot of this is just nonsense. It was all done for domestic political consumption, and it is going to cause, I think, some long-term serious problems that the jingoists and the nativists, I guess, just don't care about. Take, for example, the plight of Iranian Americans. Now, there's a huge population of Iranians in this country. I know a few of them. And I don't fear that they are going to turn on the United States in the least. And the Guardian newspaper profiles Dr. Firouz Naderi. He has worked at NASA for 35 years. He has been part of the spacecraft landing on Mars, and he is a naturalized American citizen. But lately, he's been feeling like a second-class citizen. He fears that the new visa regulations will unfairly discriminate against him and hundreds of thousands of Iranian Americans, even those born in the United States. Now, he says, if the list of countries included Pakistan, Egypt, and Saudi Arabia, then you would sort of think that including Iran might make sense. But this is not based on logic, this is based on agenda. And he says, from what he understands, adding Iran to the list was at the 11th hour. It was originally just Iraq and Syria. Then at the 11th hour, they attached Iran to it. So it just smacks of somebody with an agenda that brought this about. There are other examples. John Kerry has a son-in-law, Brian Nahed, who was born in the U.S. but is of Iranian descent. Andre Agassi, the Wimbledon champion, is the son of an Olympic boxer from Iran. And in Silicon Valley, we've got leading lights like Omid Kordestani, eBay co-founder Pierre Omidyar, and many others who all hold U.S. and Iranian citizenship. And so this is just another example of how the extremist Republicans who control the Congress right now don't give a thought to the true implications of their actions. They are just, careening from pillar to post, from headline to headline, from attack to attack. And it's really sad and troubling what the real price of this dark politics will ultimately be. And finally today, our good friend and colleague Jason Leopold at Vice News has an interesting story. As you may recall, we had a constitutional crisis that erupted in February and March of last year. It was all about the Senate Intelligence Committee's so-called review of the CIA's use of torture, rendition, kidnapping, and detention. And as you may know, Dianne Feinstein, who chaired the Intelligence Committee at the time, has accused the CIA of illegally and unconstitutionally spying on her staff members. And it all revolves around the fact that the staffers discovered the so-called Panetta Review. And that was when Leon Panetta ran the CIA. He started an internal investigation into the history of torture and what actually went on. And then he stopped. And the Senate staffers were able to discover this, not because they broke any rules, but because the contractor that was paid $40 million to set up this whole system where they could review secretly all of the emails of CIA personnel, that contractor screwed up. And the little Google-type search tool that the staffers were using turned up the Panetta Review. So with that as background, we now have three U.S. senators, Ron Wyden of Oregon, Martin Heinrich, and Mazie Hirono, who is from Hawaii. I think Heinrich is from New Mexico. And they're all members of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And they previously sent a letter to CIA Director John Brennan demanding that he acknowledge and apologize for his false statements accusing the Senate staffers of being in the wrong. Now they've upped the ante because John Brennan never answered their letter. And they've written to President Obama demanding that he compel John Brennan to make that kind of admission and apology. And so I think that this is an important effort to clean up the mess of that constitutional crisis. And Jason Leopold, who is the master of the Freedom of Information Act and manages to get some amazing documents even out of secretive agencies like the CIA, he got a document that showed that John Brennan had drafted a letter July 28, 2014, in which he apologized to Feinstein and her ranking member at the time, Senator Saxby Chambliss of Georgia. And with the apology, he admitted that the CIA's penetration of the computer network used by committee staffers was improper. But as Leopold reports, Brennan never signed or sent the letter, which the CIA had said was disclosed to Vice News by mistake. These spies, they're really good at their spycraft, aren't they? I mean, they know how to lie and keep secrets and cover it up, but whoops, every now and then they just slip up and send it out a memo that the media, they didn't want the media to see. So I give Jason Leopold a lot of credit for doggedly pursuing these issues. I'm glad that the senators have raised this with the White House, and I hope that the president will force John Brennan, whom he should have fired long before this episode erupted, he should at minimum force Brennan to acknowledge his mistake and apologize for it. Well, hunker down. I hope you survive this long weekend. I'm Peter B. Collins. Thanks for listening.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.